It's like, man, I love peanut butter and jelly. I also loved baked beans. What if we put them together? No, baked beans. Someone's listening to this going, that's one of my favorite fucking meals. What the fuck?
Oh, you mean beans and jelly?
Yeah, of course they would be British.
Did you just miss
Megatron
gender
from the Michael
Unit
Bay?
Unit one. All right. That's Shinji's mom. Put some fucking respect.
It looks like Megatron from the Michael Bay movies.
Yeah.
Michael Bay Transformers movies, doesn't it?
I can see it. Like with the teeth. Yeah.
Also like the mandible stuff. Yeah, I guess we'll see how it turns out. I don't know what to expect because this sounds schizophrenic.
Yeah.
But we did watch a bit of the Nier Automata anime.
That's all right.
Which was weird.
It was weird
to me as someone who's never played the games. Yeah, I thought we watched like 6 episodes.
I don't think we watched that many. I think we're on hiatus after like 4 episodes.
Yeah, but I understand that. Yeah, that was really weird. I guess, that's kind of the thing. You can kind of do anything with Evangelion. So, who knows what this will be?
Like, the implication kind of makes it seem like it's going to be like a impacts kind of thing where it's focusing on like different characters.
You think it'll be we're finally going to get the in between period between 3.0 and 4.0?
Maybe that's it. That would be kind of crazy.
I know that was like a planned project. I think there is like a manga thing for it, but
I would hope that Yokotaro wouldn't be fucking like straddled down with that shit. Bring him on to make a prequel that you were already working on. It's like, all right, you can like play with the details, but it's gonna end leading up into 4.0. It's like, okay.
And I feel like Hideaki Anno is much more of like, yeah, there was this tweet from 2024, or not tweet, but interview 2024, where he says, assigning somebody else to make Evangelion is probably also an option. The higher degree of freedom, the better it is for the works.
Yeah.
So.
That's the only way you can really pull this off, I feel like. Like, if you keep going back to the well with Shinji and fucking Unit 1, it's like, what are we doing? Like, the story has ended 3 times now. Like, move on.
No, but you understand. You understand. The story is going to be really metatextual, and it's going to be about, like, the concept of Evangelion.
Yeah.
It's never been done before.
Never been done before. I don't know. I'm in a weird spot with Ava where, like, I've never really cared that much about new projects for it. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, Ava ended with End of Ava, essentially.
Right.
So, like, anything coming out now, like, I can enjoy. I really like 4.0. 4.0 is, like, great.
Yeah.
But, like, anything coming out, I'm not.
There's also, like, all the different manga, all the video games and stuff.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like Ava was its own thing. It ended in 1997 with End of Ava. Everything else is just kind of like supplementary. It's kind of how I view Rebellion, I guess, with like Madoka, where it's like the TV series ended and it's just that's it. That's the ending. Rebellion is like something else. And it's like, I like it. I think it's cool. I enjoy that we're getting more, but it's not that. Like, I'm not like, oh my God, not soy jacking like all the fucking Star Wars people were when they announced the Force Awakens or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to say there was a reply that we got. Let me see if I can find it. It was actually only like an hour ago. If I scroll through, I should be able to find it. Where was it? There was, we got a reply.
Got a reply on the Twitter, like a fan mail, except everyone hates us.
A fan mail. Someone left a comment on our web zone, and I thought it was an interesting comment that I that I vehemently disagree with. This is all from like 8 hours ago. God fucking damn it. Did they delete that? Bitch ass fucking delete their goddamn comment?
You can't delete your comments
on them. We don't have that option on this website. No. It was about Evangelion. I just don't.
I don't know if I saw this. What the fuck
it was?
Control F Evangelion, or specific words you remember within the comment?
Yeah. Hold on. Okay, every result for Anno, but they basically said something to the effect of, it's not Evangelion without Hideaki Anno, and they're not really, you know, they're not interested in the brand of Evangelion, essentially, which I don't really agree with. I think
it depends
if you're going to do more Evangelion.
On what you're defining as Evangelion. Like, if we strictly define Evangelion as like the story of Shinji and all that, which I think is a fair definition, essentially, because Evangelion is the story of Shinji. If you're assigning it as like that is what Evangelion is, I think that is a fair, like, that's kind of where I am. Like, as far as like, I don't really care. But like, when I say I don't really care, it's more in the context of like, I'm not that invested in it. So like, you can make more stuff. Mm-hmm. It'll be more like Fate to me, like Fate Zero and Fate Stay Night, all that. Like, they keep making Fate stuff. I still like Fate Zero as much as I liked Fate Zero. Them making Fate Zero 2, which is like a spinoff with Zero 2 from fucking Darling in the Franxx or whatever, that's not going to impact my my feelings on Fate Zero at this point.
They're separate things fundamentally.
There are series that could happen with. I'm not saying like as like a wholesale sort of thing that it wouldn't happen if there's like a good kind of long running show and they kind of fumble the ending later on. But as far as Ava, again, like, I to me, it kind of just ended in 1997. The rebuilds have kind of just been their own thing. I haven't really been that.
Yeah.
Invested in, like, that hadn't impacted my view of the original story. This is kind of more the same of that. Like, it's just its own thing.
Yeah. Okay. I scrolled through my fucking like browser history and I found it. And yeah, they did just delete the tweet.
That's unfortunate.
But I can hover over and I can still fully read it. So it's like, don't know if Anno isn't involved. It's not Ava. Like, it's Metal. Yeah, it's like Metal Gear if Kojima isn't involved. It's not Metal Gear. I'm not a Zoomer with TikTok brain rot who just consume based on the brand.
I mean, I understand the sentiment. I agree partially. Sure. But I do think that people have a hard time sort of separating, you know, the brand or what, like, you can have your Star Wars original trilogy and still love the original trilogy and think everything else is ass and think that nothing after the original trilogy exists or whatever. That's completely valid. It's also valid to enjoy the other things that come after and not have to stringently kind of assign it to Star Wars. Like,
yeah.
You can like The Last Jedi, I guess, as like some kind of like weird fuck you film piece.
The existence of the Fooly Cooly sequels does not hamper our view of Fooly Cooly. Yeah,
basically. And if someone likes Fooly Cooly, yeah,
nor would I want.
I was like, that's fine. Yeah.
And it's not that I'm like opposed to like the existence of Fooly Cooly sequels or Fooly Cooly sequels without the involvement of Suramaki. If they're good, they're good. You know, at the end of the day, it's just at the very least, Progressive was not very good. We still haven't seen any of the other ones.
Well, I mean, I've seen like the first episode of Alternative. And I just wouldn't. I was like, okay. I see what they're doing. Need to watch
the
one
with the thing from Fantastic Four.
See, I oh yeah, was it shoegaze or grunge?
Shoegaze and grunge.
I watched Alternative on April Fool's Day 2017. Is that what that was?
Mm-hmm.
So I watched the first episode when it came out, and I was like, damn, this is like okay, I guess. And then Progressive came out, and I was like, oh, fuck. But yeah, I don't have a, like, I don't have a problem with people liking alternative, which a lot of people seem to like fully cool alternative. But like, I also understand the idea that like fully coolly is Suramaki. I don't, like, again, I don't subscribe to auteur theory, but like, he is a vital component of what made Fully Cooly Fully Cooly. Something that comes after can be kind of in like the spirit of Fully Cooly. Like, obviously I think Fully Cooly is very similar to Daikon 4, and nobody really super involved on Fully Cooly was involved in Daikon 4. But it kind of has that.
Suramaki wasn't even born yet.
Yeah, like it doesn't. You can capture the spirit.
Suramaki, did you know Suramaki made Fully Cooly when he was like 16?
Damn. No wonder it captured being a teenager so well. What a fucking prodigy. No, like, you can capture the spirit of these things well enough. They don't necessarily have to be called Evangelion. They don't necessarily have to be called, like, I think Monica like captures the spirit of Eva pretty well, and it's like,
well, that's why I've always kind of said, like, Sunny Boy to me feels like the sequel to Fully Cooly.
And I guess that, like, that's really just kind of reflective of how, or what we took out of Fully Cooly or Eva or whatever. Sunny Boy, I can see what you're talking about. Sunny Boy is not like a sequel to Fully Cooly to me, just because Fully Cooly represents like this grand synthesis of all these parts that create this sort of grander thesis of teenage adolescence and childhood and growing up and all this. That Sunny Boy does not really capture as well. Like, it does touch on the same themes, but.
Well, no, well, like, Sunny Boy is, like, because Fully Cooly ends with Naota going from elementary school to middle school.
Right.
And then Sunny Boy is about these kids going from middle school into high school and kind of, like, entering the world and becoming more, like, of a, like, actual, like, adults.
Right.
Kind of coming out of adolescence. And I feel like, you know, Naota in Fully Cooly is very, like, angry at the world and, you know, he has this idea of like adulthood and how adults should act, but then it doesn't seem like any of the adults in his life are really behaving like adults, like the brother that he has that he idolizes. And then Sunny Boy is basically just kind of burnt out after that point, where it's just kind of like, yeah, the world is all this stuff and all this rules and all this bullshit that I can't even begin to understand, and I'm just kind of emotionally shutting myself off.
Yeah, well, likewise, I schizophrenically view Fully Cooly as a sequel to Daikon 4, which has none of those things present in it. And I'm sure there are people listening to this that both think that we're both fucking insane because we're just like having an argument of Fully Cooly is the sequel to Daikon, and they're just like,
I have seen that comparison. There is a video making that comparison. Was that actually
Sunny Boy and Fully Cooly?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. From Weeb Jail, there's this video that I have not watched, but I do know this video exists.
Is there a Fully Cooly Daikon video? Probably not.
You gotta make the video.
I don't wanna make that video.
Oh no, it's all just gonna be, oh, there's a Daikon reference in it.
Daikon 5. See, I mean, they put it in the show. It says Daikon 5. It's clearly the sequel.
Yeah.
Not even the debate. It's also
the sequel to Evangelion.
It's a sequel to Gundam. You got Amuro in there.
That's true. Yeah, Amuro became a fucking asshole adult.
Lost his eyebrows for some reason.
Because the eyebrows represent something.
They represent adulthood. Like everything else in Fully
Cooly. But we are talking about this. Suramaki is also directing the new Evangelion, which isn't really out of left field, just because he was very, like, he was basically like the director on the Anno was the like top guy, like, you know, but in terms of like the animation, the style and the storyboard, I think a lot of that fell on Suramaki.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with people saying Evangelion is Anno, but if you hold that opinion and then you also like the rebuilds, I think you need to like re-examine some things. Because it's like, that's very much like a Suramaki.
Especially after watching G-Quux and seeing more of like Suramaki's style, just now that he was finally able to do something that was not the rebuilds. Yeah. It really made that clear, like how much of the rebuilds was his visual style. And I imagine we'll probably see that a fair bit as well with the new Fooly Cool. The new Fooly Cool, the new Evangelion.
Man, of Suramaki, Fooly Cool would go fucking hard.
I mean,
can you imagine if he made a Fooly Cool?
That'd be crazy. But it probably might also be like kind of similar to G-Quux as well, in terms of I'd imagine it'll be fairly controversial. And fit people will probably have similar complaints in terms of why aren't things set up as much, or like why is this going so fast?
I can definitely see the fast thing. Funny thing about the why isn't this set up thing is that's already in Ava. People are complaining about like what the fuck are these aliens? What the far? That's not in the fucking show. Yeah. Like I think there was somebody that was arguing in our mentions or whatever the fuck they're called, our notifications. And they were like, what did the first guy initially say? The first guy said something about like the Ava's representing motherhood or whatever. And they're like, where does it say any of that in the show?
Oh, I saw that.
I had to chime in. I'm like, actually, that's expressly kind of said in the movie. But it is hinted at in the show.
Yeah, the movie basically ends with Yui being like, I put myself in the robot and launched myself into space as a testament to humanity's existence.
And she just looks at the camera. It's like, I put myself in the robot.
It's like, and I'm just like, that was your master plan? Can we talk about it? No, that'll be a separate discussion of how terrible Yui is in Evangelion. What if that's what the show is about?
I don't agree with the Yui slander, okay? You know, she was putting her son in the position to succeed. She knew that Sele was behind the scenes and someone had to stop him. And who else could stop him but the robot? So she has like, I gotta jump in the robot so my son can make the decision at the end of Evangelion.
It was all part of her master plan, okay?
She plotted it all out in the script during the storyboard process.
It was all part of her master. Could you imagine it's just like Evangelion, Yui dies, and then Gendo just kind of remarries?
That's what the Yokotaro one's going to be. Gendo gets cocked. It's revealed that Yui was actually part of the Gainax staff.
I mean, that would be kind of fun is if like instead of like because the rebuilds are like a meta commentary, it feels more specifically on like the anime, but it's not really incorporating different aspects of like the entire Evangelion media mix. It would be interesting to see it start pulling stuff from like
Girlfriend of Steel,
the Girlfriend of Steel or the what's the fucking
PS2 game?
Who's the character designer in Evangelion?
Oh, Sadamoto?
Like Sadamoto's manga or the Shinji Ikari Raising Project. So we're just gonna have Gendo punch Ramiel and stuff.
I mean, the rebuilds kind of are doing that because it is. I mean, you do see like on the moon, Karu is like awoken in the same position or whatever, like countless fucking times. So it's kind of like a story that repeats, it rhymes or whatever.
But do it in a less pretentious and more fun way, like Fooly Cooly.
Yeah,
is what I can. But then we also have Yokotaro on here, so it'll be very pretentious.
Yeah. I mean, Yokotaro has some fun.
That's true.
Yokotaro's got like the crazy endings that you just like kill yourself, and there's literally an ending in Nier Automata where you like uninstall your OS to like if you because you could like. Kind of like it's like nodes or whatever where like you pick stuff out and you can pull it out and that's kind of like your hard drive space or whatever for like moves, and you just have your like OS in there too, so like you could pull it out, and as soon as you do you just get an ending because you killed yourself.
I don't know how that would be factored into like
how you do stuff like that in an anime. So we'll see. And again, we're just spitballing here. We have no idea.
Nobody has any idea
what the fuck
idea.
This is going to be. No. I mean, it could be just entirely new characters, like an entirely separate story for all we know.
I don't think Yokotaro has any idea what the fuck it's going to be like, and he's fucking working on it. They're probably like almost in post-production and he's like, I still don't know what the fuck I'm doing in this thing.
I just kind of show up and I just have these weird drawings and people interpret them.
I just had like a fucking guy reach out and he's like, hey, you want to write an anime? And then like, you know, about 7 weeks
into this production, contacting different Indians on Fiverr and asking for their ideas.
5 weeks of the production, I was like, oh, this is an Ava production.
It doesn't. What's Evangelion?
Well, they're making a new Ava. It's like, oh, you are me.
Oh, you know, he would probably like sit down in an interview and be like, I haven't even seen Evangelion, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I hope he does. That would be funny.
That'd be so funny. Yeah, just fucking with people. That'd be a very Yokotaro bit.
Honestly, that would probably be better. Like, I think,
yeah,
it's what Sir Maki said. Like, if they do make more Fooly Cooly, they should just not have anything relation to the original.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly. Just, it should be about the spirit of it.
Just use the name, you know, just have someone be what was Fooly Cooly about? Oh, it was about like growing up or something and kind of nostalgia. Okay. Yeah, I'll just write something about
like
that.
Like a loose thematic through line. Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like, the Talking Head song, The Overload at the end of Remain in Light?
No.
Oh, I want to say that was conceived of basically someone described what Joy Division sounds like to them. They'd never heard Joy Division. Someone described what Joy Division sounds like to them, and they kind of like wrote a song that was similar to what like was described as like Joy Division. And you listen to it and it's like, it's actually pretty close. It's kind of surprising, honestly.
Fascinating meta commentary on Joy Division.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we're contractually obligated to watch the new Pat Labor, to watch the new Vottoms. I haven't even seen Vottoms.
I've seen it.
God, we're so fucked.
I mean, that's just what this podcast is at the end of the day. We're just, not Plebeian, the Wee. Not anime. What's that fucking podcast where like the guy doesn't even watch anime and the other guy like
Anime Out of Context? Something?
Yeah, we're just Anime Out of Context with a different name.
Yeah. You see an anime. I actually know nothing about anime. And it's just, yeah, that's the whole thing.
This is the gap in our powers. All right.
Are you telling me we're in a watch time gap relationship? That sounds kind of problematic. Has this podcast just been you grooming me for the past 5 years?
Yes. It's not been 5 years.
Oh, well, hello and welcome to the Weeb Crew. That's been it's been like
4 years and 4 months.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Like November, October. Yeah, anyway.
You ruined my perfect segue, by the way, you fucking cocksucker.
That's my job, all right? If I don't give you pushback to your horse shit all the time, who knows where we'd be?
Welcome to the Weeb Crew. I'm your host, Sciotic, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Moomy.
If it were easy, it wouldn't be a job.
You enjoy what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. Also, you could just be unemployed like this piece of shit over here. What are we talking about today? I guess we did say at the end of the last episode we were going to talk about Shiba Yugi.
Yeah, I guess there's other seasonals we didn't talk about. We could talk about. We did spend a lot of time talking about Ava, at least. That's anime.
Is this technically the 100th episode of the podcast, by the way?
I think on the
RSS it says like episode 99, but I know we never put the 3x3 episode on here, so who knows.
This will be 99. I guess technically, because like, I don't know, it's weird, not all the episodes that are on RSS on Spotify and Apple Apple Podcasts or whatever are on YouTube. So there's not 100 podcast episodes on YouTube, but there's not 100 podcast episodes on Spotify, but I guess this is technically 100.
Yeah, go fuck yourself, by the way, if you want to listen to this podcast in chronological order. We're just going to make life hard. There are entire episodes we've recorded and been like, that was shit. And we're just dated releasing. We just put it on Patreon.
Yeah.
But,
hey, maybe you should bang for your buck. About,
like, Game Awards.
It's only $1. I guess so.
I mean, you get that. Yeah, I guess so. You get it, like,
that we decided you get was one garbage. Free
episode a year.
Only $1. You get
the fucking scraps. But yeah, I guess, yeah, because I didn't want to talk about Shibu Yugi last week just because, one, we were in the middle of an arc and now we've completed that arc. And also, I wanted just some time to kind of hash out my thoughts, you know, type them up and you post them in the Discord and stuff, get a little bit better, you know. I feel like I'm not a big person in terms of like taking notes for anime, but sometimes it does help to just kind of, you know, put your thoughts into words, like, you know, put them on paper.
Yeah.
So I feel like I have a little bit better of what I want to say with Shibu Yugi, which it's interesting because I feel like is this one of the more popular anime of the season?
Like technically, literally, I don't know. I've not seen like a lot of people talk about it, but I've seen a good number of people talk positively about it.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like in the top 10 on anime list and probably on my anime list as well. Like, I feel like it's been a fairly popular show this season, which is interesting because the show is very weird, especially in terms of the direction of the show. Yeah. And I feel like we kind of anticipated the show having like a weird style because we are familiar with the director Sota Ueno from his work on Kimai Seikatsu.
Yeah, long-time listeners will remember that when on Days with My Stepsister, we did say this is a director to look out for. We're going to be looking out for his later works, and here we are.
We were getting in there early on the ground floor. So I was looking forward to this because that Kimai Seikatsu showed, I think, a lot of promise. It was a very interesting take on that kind of story. It brought some stylistic ideas to the table that we don't tend to see very often in TV anime. And we get that, but even more. I mean, Shibu Yugi does not have like the exact same kind of directorial style as Kimai Seikatsu, but we do see certain elements in terms of interesting framing, interesting storyboarding, stuff that's conducive towards more limited animation in favor of this kind of stylization. Very, very moody, very kind of contemplative and introspective. There's also elements of like voyeurism as well, with all these like wide shots that make you kind of feel like you're like a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
Very interesting stylistically. And that's definitely been, I think between the two of us, that's definitely been like the main strong point of the show. Like, yeah, what the show has done very well, not necessarily perfectly. I do have some problems with it in terms of like character drawings could be a little bit stronger at points, but it General is a very nice. Yeah. But I mean, to be fair, this is like Studio Dean, who has not had the best reputation.
Hey, Studio Dean kind did Rakugo. They did some good stuff.
True.
They didn't have that stretch.
That was a decade ago.
Yeah. I was going to say, they had that stretch where people were like, whoa, Dean's on fire, because they had Rakugo and then they had Konosuba.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't really gotten, hasn't really been a ton of stuff from Dean. I think maybe Twilight Out of Focus. People had some nice stuff to say about that. Oh, yeah. There was Ninja versus Gokudo.
That was fun.
Last season, which, yeah, it was not particularly like stylistically insane, but it was fun, and that kind of look definitely added to that vibe, that energy.
So is
that
this director a Dean director
brought to
then?
The table,
or is he freelance?
He is. I don't know, because Kimai Seikatsu was also produced at Studio Dean.
Yeah, that's what I was noticing.
So yeah, so I mean, maybe he isn't. I don't really know. It looks like he's done some stuff at like Farigon, which was like PA Works.
Yeah.
What about Sasaka and Miyano? That was also Dean. So he's been with Dean for a while. But it looks like he has worked at like other studios. Oh, he had production assistant credit on the second season of Rakugo. Yeah. Oh, I guess that's another interesting thing I want to point out about this director, Sota Ueno, is that he's not an animator. He's not coming from like the like animation pipeline in terms of like he started as like an in-betweener and works his way up to key animator. It looks like a lot of his early credits are from the producer side of things, which doesn't really get talked about all that often, but there's a whole other side to anime production that is not like the artists doing stuff as much as it is like the logistical people trying to keep everything on track. So he starts off, he has like a lot of production assistant credits, and then kind of looks like he has some key animation credits, but it looks like he kind of transitioned from production assistant into being an episode director, which is interesting as well, because I feel like a lot of my favorite directors in anime are not animator. Like Mamoru Oshii is not an animator. Isao Takahata, not an animator. Everyone loves Osamu Dezaki. I don't think Osamu Dezaki was an animator. I think Akiyuki Shinbo has some animation credits, but he very early on was just kind of became an episode director and storyboard artist. And it's interesting because I feel like they're coming at it from a bit of a different perspective, a bit of a different angle, where they're looking at it more in terms less in terms of like the animation side of things and more so in terms of like the stylization and storyboarding.
I think you just unintentionally came across like a banger video idea.
A banger video idea?
Directors?
Do animators? I mean, that's kind of the thing is like, no, not always. Like there are some of the best, most talented people working in the anime industry. They're not directors. They don't, you know, want to be for a lot of people that just love the specific craft of animation, which is a lot of people, they just want to do the key animator. Cause like, as a director, you're also taking on much more of like,
you get like Hideaki Anno was a key animator.
Sure. Obviously, like Hayao Miyazaki.
He was an animator.
I'm not saying this is like Masaaki Uwasa would be not like, I'm not saying this is like an absolute of thing. But like, I mean, there are so many exceptionally talented key animators that I guarantee you, if you ask them, I was like, would you ever want to direct something? And they'd be like, not really. Outside of like, you know, like a short, like, Star Wars, Vision, Black that Shinyo here. Yeah. Like Shinyo here is himself is not really a director. And that was just kind of a thing where it's like, this is the hardest fucking flex and we're just going to let him do that. But in terms of like directing a TV anime, it's like, it doesn't seem like something that would interest him. It also probably doesn't interest a lot of people who are just interested in the craft of animation specifically. Perfectly fine. Like the pinnacle of being like an animator like that, arguably, I guess, you can also just be a key animator forever and do legendary work, but also being a character designer is another big thing as well, because, and this is something that gets under discussed. I'm just rambling about anime production stuff, but in the anime industry, and this is a big difference from like, you know, the American anime and animation industry, is that character designers are also animators. So if you're a character designer in the anime industry, you are basically working on corrections. Like, you know, more or less every cut is going to come across your desk and you're going to be like doing like corrections and stuff to make sure everything actually looks like your character designs at the end of the day. Right. So like if you're a character designer in the anime industry, I'm going to say it's all basically guaranteed that you're also an exceptionally talented animator. Maybe there are some exceptions to that rule that I just can't think of off the top of my head. But in the vast majority of cases, that's going to be the case.
Even thinking about it, all like, say, Anno doesn't even... Mm-hmm. I feel like people like Anno don't even like being directors necessarily. Like, not even touching on Naven shit. Like, you look at like what he wants to do now. He just wants to kind of be a producer at Kara and just help people do what they want to do.
Yeah, well, he's like, and he's kind of an ideas guy at the end of the day. Like, there's like when they were making like Shin Godzilla, he was very like reliant on like I feel like I was talking about this with Steven at one point, but like the director of photography, I think it was I believe it was on Shin Godzilla, Anoa basically just approached the director of photography and he was just like, can you make the shot look like this? And it would show like the director of photography something, the cinematographer, like a picture or something, and cinematographer would go, I can do something like
he's
that.
He's just like just drawing in terms of every like, shot. He's like, can you make it look like this drawing I did? And it's like, why aren't you just animating you this?
This drawing? I mean, that's kind of all. I mean, that's to be fair, Hideaki Anno famously cannot draw people. That's all. That was like the thing.
He's like a savant for drawing machines and cars or whatever.
Machines and explosions and stuff. That's why Miyazaki gave him the fucking melting demon god cut on Nausicaa. But also, like, if you look at like the storyboards for the opening for the OP for Evangelion, like that auto storyboarded, it looks like such fucking shit. It gets the idea across at the end of the day, but it's also like, oh my god.
It's like when you draw, like you're writing with your left hand. Like you have beautiful writing with your right hand, then you start writing your name with your left hand, and it looks like a fucking 2-year-old.
Yeah. All this to basically say that, yeah, the direction of Shibayugi is very interesting, and I, at least to me, it comes across like that's very much being informed by the fact that Sote Ono is coming at this from a bit of a different angle than someone would if they were coming up as an animator. Granted, I could be wrong here, maybe he has a lot of animation credits that I'm just not seeing looking at list sites, but at least from what I've seen of his credits, he did not really come into the industry as an animator, came in as a production assistant, and then transitioned into being an episode director, which I feel like informs his priorities in terms of visual stylization. Because, like this is the case with Gimai Seikatsu, it's the case with Shibayugi, the animation is very limited. It comes across like they have, and maybe this is the case, maybe it isn't, but it does feel like they are working within production constraints. And trying to devise a way to make something look very visually interesting and very visually appealing within those constraints. So even if they're not necessarily able to do a ton of animation, you know, this is the thing with like Gimai Seikatsu. It's like, yeah, we're gonna have like this like shot in another room, like the camera will be in like in another room. We're just gonna be looking through a doorway, and they're gonna be sitting there just kind of eating dinner for like, you know, a good like minute and a half, and we're just gonna let that just kind of sit there for that time period. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. It's very, very meditative, very, again, kind of manages to be introspective and voyeuristic at the same time. I really quite like the style.
I like the style.
And I feel like, yeah.
It's unpopular opinion. I like the style. I think that is basically carrying the show. They feel like there's... Again, we're just talking about this with Fully Cooley, where it's like I like synthesis of parts that like all work together mm-hmm. in a really cohesive
yes.
way.
Yes.
This feels like you are taking a material that like maybe you're not as like passionate about, and you were making something visually what you were super passionate about. You're like, oh, I love this visual style, but like you're kind of being bogged down by the source material.
Yeah, that's kind of the, I mean, to be fair, Gimai Seikatsu, like you look at like the, because Gimai Seikatsu was not a light novel series originally, it was actually a YouTube like web kind of series, uh-huh. Like a video novel kind of thing. Go look it up, it's subbed in English if you want to check it out, and it has a much more like straightforward kind of like rom-com kind of tone, you know, the Starkey main character, kind of like you know, like an Origairu kind of vibe, or a Roshideri kind of vibe to it, which the TV anime does not have at all. But granted, I think that the concept for Gimai Seikatsu, where it's basically, you know, this single father, the single mother get married, they move in together, and then they both have kids that are the, you know, one's a boy, one's a girl, and they are the same age. And I feel like that premise lends itself just as much to being like a romantic comedy as much as it does an introspective domestic drama.
Right. Well, I mean,
with Shibayugi.
Yeah. So like that's a synthesis of like, your directorial style for this case or whatever is working in favor yeah. of the story that Days of My Stepsister is trying to tell. Like, you are a fly in the yes. wall watching these two characters kind of just have to get used to each other and kind of delineate like the boundaries of the relationship.
Yeah.
This is.
So, I mean, I would say that I like the style overall in Shibuyugi more than Days of My Stepsister. But I do agree that I think Days of My Stepsister is an overall more cohesive project.
Yeah, aesthetically, this is superior because it's kind of a evolution of his style and like a refinement of it in some mm-hmm. ways. But like, as far as like a, I would have a hard time saying as a style, I like it more because like I like it more on like an aesthetic level, but style I would kind of say it encompasses more than just the aesthetics of it specifically. I think it sure. would encompass, you know, how it's kind of conveying its themes and those kind of synthetic elements. And it is mm-hmm. kind of at odds, like, which is weird because like the source material, I've not read the manga or the light novel or anything by any means. But just from like the anime, I looked
a little bit after at the manga.
Yeah, we've looked at it like afterwards. Like we've like gone and looked at some mm-hmm. pieces and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But just
we're like, not going into this familiar with right. the story and the source material.
But like just looking at it from the material that we do, like the anime alone, like it does very clearly seem to be going for like this commentary on, you know, watching these girls do these kind of exploitative things for money.
Yeah, I guess to set up the premise of the show for anyone who maybe isn't familiar, it's basically a death game anime where these girls participate in these death games where they're not necessarily required to kill one another at all points of the game. It's not like a Hunger Games or a Battle Royale situation. Right. It's more like an escape room type situation.
The consequences can often lead to death.
Yeah, yeah. Also, seemingly at the end, they're like, they've just been consistently forced to kill at least one person at the end of the game.
Generally.
Generally. But that's kind of the thing, is that I feel like there are elements of the show that are actually fairly cohesive. Like, I do think that the fragmentary kind of way that they're approaching things, like the characterization, the way they're delivering characters' backstories, certain aspects in terms of like what's going on in different characters' heads, I think all of that is like stylistically cohesive, where, you know, it's very fragmentary, like the backstories, or we're not necessarily having characters constantly giving their inner monologue. You are left to infer certain things just through the visuals alone. And I think all that works, but there are issues with it in terms of this is a death game series. To a certain extent, we need to be a little bit more familiar with like the rules and logistics of what's happening on screen in order to be, at least for us, I would say, be a little bit more invested in what's happening.
Yeah.
Like things could be maybe explained a little bit more. Like, granted, there are some things that I think it does an interesting job, at least in terms of setting up, like the ballots at the end of the second game. Like, we were like, how did Yuki, the main character, get these extra ballots? And we kind of like went through the previous episodes and like, oh, OK, these are just like these minor things, like these single shots that like we can go back and be like, OK, it's almost too subtle to a certain extent. But it is there nonetheless.
Well, I still think we even figured out where she got two of the ballots because she explicitly gave one of them. We're like, oh, this is the third one. But she explicitly gave that one back to that character. So we're like, okay, we know where she got yeah. two and then the third because like they all got the extra one.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time at the end of these episodes trying to debate and figure out what happened. And unlike something like Gnosia, where like we're having like these after episode discussions, and I feel like we're kind of that works a little bit more to that show's benefit. Here it's kind of like, I feel like they could have explained some stuff a little bit more, especially in the third game that just wrapped up with the most recent episode last week. Where like the ending of that, we were just kind of like, what? And to granted, to a certain extent, you could say that those aspects aren't necessarily what the show is concerned with, which I think is fair. But at the same time, they are nonetheless still elements in the show. And again, we do have to look at this from the perspective that this is still nonetheless a death game anime. And we do kind of need to incorporate that aspect a little bit more, give it a little bit more priority. Otherwise, the fundamental premise of the show just kind of feels perfunctory.
It's funny because, like, I feel like this is all a problem that's fabricated in the anime for the most part. Because, like, from what I see in the manga, yes, a lot of the things that we, like, kind of are raising eyebrows at are not in the manga. Like, they...
No, they're all things that, like, well, a lot of, I think a lot of, like, our issues and a lot of our confusion comes from, like, omissions. And it almost feels like the anime is very gung-ho about, you know, the idea of, like, show, don't tell. And I'm like, tell me a little bit, please.
Tell me more. Also, they literally are changing things where it's, like, not even the same solution from the manga or the light novel. That is now a problem where you're like, okay, this is what?
like, oh, this character death, it was actually just happened completely differently in the manga. And we're trying to figure out what the fuck happened in the anime. So we can't refer back to the manga or light novel because it's now just completely different. And we're just kind of looking at it and going like, yeah, that's kind of confusing because it's also like a wide shot. So we can't clearly tell what's going on. It's almost like, you know, at a certain point, it would just be better to cut to black and leave it completely ambiguous rather than give us some stuff and then
try to work out the logistics of it.
Yeah.
And for anyone listening, we will talk about spoilers, but we'll be sure to be like, hey, we're about to start.
Sure. Yeah. We'll get into spoilers here in a bit. But I do think that it is stylistically coherent in some ways. It's just not all completely tied together. What I would say is that I wouldn't say it's carried by its direction. I would say that it is being led by its direction insofar as it feels like it has this idea of how it wants to present the series, of how it wants to present this story. And every creative decision in the show kind of exists downstream of that. So all of these different aspects are being informed by and kind of enhanced by that directorial style. And, you know, gives me more things to appreciate about, you know, the way certain aspects of like characterization are handled. But then at the same time, it feels more like a one way street. So like the directorial style is making me appreciate more the characterization in certain kind of ways that wouldn't be present if it had a different style. But at the same time, it's not like the characterization is giving me a deeper appreciation of the style, like justifying the style.
I think we talked about this not on the podcast, but like after episode 3 or so, maybe 4. I was saying the style of this show kind of leads you to believe that there is more going on than there might actually be, because they are omitting things for you to try to invite you to piece together, right?
Yeah.
This is a death game show where they kind of do put in hints, like you kind of were pointing out, like there's a scene here that kind of hints at like them doing this and then that informs what happens later. So they are encouraging you to think critically about what you were watching. It's not just like a turn your brain off, have fun. It's a stylely cool show.
You're not supposed to think about it. Yeah, you're meant to be actively engaging with it. On multiple different levels, I would say, not just in terms of like what's happening in the games, but also in terms of like what's happening with these characters.
So the problem I'm running into a lot of the times, I feel like, is the way a direction is, it makes it feel like there are things that are more important than there actually are, or like they're going to be smarter than they're actually going to be. So like you kind of are looking for answers that it feels like it's inviting you to find, but that aren't really there or might not be satisfactory, I guess.
Yeah. When you start thinking about it more, you're just kind of like, it's not as satisfying as it feels like it. Like, an example I would give, I think when we talked about this at the start of the season, I compared like the directing style. It feels like something like Akiyuki Shinbo would do. But with something like Bakemonogatari, for example, there are no background characters really in Monogatari. And that's like a stylistic decision, but at the same time, it's also like, oh, this is like, you know, it's playing into like the subjectivity of the story as well. So like Araragi, the reason there are no background characters is because Araragi doesn't really perceive other people around him all that much. So there's like multiple layers to it that I can appreciate why the stylization exists, both in terms of how that's informing the characters and then how the characters are then informing the directorial style. I feel like that does exist to an extent in Shibuyugi. Like there is this recurring idea of like of Yuki as a ghost, as someone who kind of doesn't really exist in the real world. Her only tangible connection to the real world and other people is through these death games. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, that kind of fly on the wall, a more ethereal direction lends itself to that. But at the same time, I do wish that there was a little bit more to kind of chew on with that idea.
Well, even like from the perspective, again, of like being exploited, like I feel like it could do, like there are shots that are like great. Like I remember there are a lot of shots during like the planning phases of these games where you kind of just see the characters sitting together on couches or whatever. And you're kind of the fly on the wall, kind of in like a shot of like the top corner of the room or something, looking down at them. And it's a very kind of voyeuristic shot where it's like you're kind of in the position of the people who are watching these girls play these death games for their amusement, for money and whatever. I feel those work. I feel like the problem is it kind of feels like almost ashamed of how like edgy and exploitative, trashy pulpy the material is, where you're
pornographic almost.
Like you have like an arc where they're all running around in bath towels and it's supposed to be like a, you know, the bathhouse episode or whatever. There's this kind of more explicit commentary going on with that. And it doesn't really like ever bring attention to it.
It's almost because, I mean, obviously, we've looked at the manga. The manga has a lot more like comedy and a lot more fan service in it. Like, you know, the first episode of the show, they are running around in maid outfits, which is also meant to be is like a very like sexual kind of thing to it. And we get like different like, you know, that's more incorporated into the manga. Whereas, the sex appeal of the games is something that is not taken. It's present nonetheless, because, like you said, we have, like, I think in the next arc, the arc that is coming up in the anime, they are going to be running around in like Playboy bunny outfits. And it's like, that's absurd, but we're not really taking advantage of it's not so much even acknowledging it. It's like taking advantage of it. In some capacity. And I'll go back to like Akiyuki Shinbo. Akiyuki Shinbo has a very like artsy fartsy kind of pretentious style to it. But at the same time, the man loves fan service to an almost absurd degree. And again, like the fan service in something like Monogatari, it again plays into the subjectivity of the style of the direction. Like it's all kind of layered together and cohesive. It all works together in tandem. Whereas it feels like with Shibuyugi, there's kind of like an elephant in the room, like a hole that isn't being filled, which is, you know, basically these girls are like, these games are basically porn to a certain extent. Like, I think it was episode.
It's like Red Rooms or something.
I mean, there's literally, you know, like the, we literally have like the post-shoot interview, with Yuki at the end of the second arc, and that also feels like something that's, you know, like a kind of like pornographic kind of thing. Her, like, we meet their like agents or managers basically after the second game. And I believe Yuki's manager basically says something else like, we do truly care for, and we want to do a lot for you girls. And it's like, that's kind of just abuser rhetoric, isn't it? That kind of almost sounds like a pimp talking to a certain extent.
It feels like sports managers too. It's like, oh, we really want to take care of you, make sure you get your money and all that. But like, if that's, you know, player gets injured, like they don't generate them any more revenue. The manager's not going to, their agent's not going to fucking give a shit. They're going to drop them.
So I do. Yeah, there are aspects that I do wish were more. Well, before we get into spoilers, I guess I would say that my overall thoughts for the show can basically be summarized as, I still like the show overall, I should say. I like it quite a bit. It's not, it could be towards like the top, like one of my favorite shows of the season, if just certain things were tweaked or maybe like focus was shifted a little bit. Just, you know, some of these things, like I feel like it's just kind of, I have some minor issues. Yeah, not so much minor, but like I have some issues with it that are ultimately holding it back. So between where it could be at for me and how much I could be enjoying it versus where I am, like how much I actually am enjoying it, there is more of a gap there compared to basically any other show this season. So while I still like the show, I feel like a lot of my opinion is kind of just complaints as a result, because of that kind of a gap. I'm slightly disappointed, I guess, is how I would say it.
Yeah, I liked the direction. I've not really liked this as an adaptation, though. It's like you've made a very stylish, very interesting looking adaptation, but like adapting the story itself, I feel like there's so much left on the table. And maybe it's like, I don't know, immaturity as far as direction goes or something. Maybe they just are lacking some experience, and this is kind of the, you know, crack showing through of that experience. Yeah,
was this like a something that he wanted to adapt, or was this something that was like assigned to him, but then he was given more free reign to adapt it how he wanted? So maybe there's like a kind of like dissonance, a little bit of a conflict there.
Because I know we've been talking about like in the, you know, the series thread or whatever you want to call it. We've been talking about like the reactions people have had, where I think it was episode,
especially like the Japanese reactions that we see on Twitter.
I think it was episode 4, which was the end of the second arc. People were complaining that like things were omitted because they're like, oh, I really liked this scene. And you ever take it from the angle of like, well, I don't really like that kind of edgy exploitative media anyway. And I kind of agree where it's like, I probably wouldn't be super interested in it. But I think the problem I have is like these things are being omitted, but they're not like being replaced by anything.
So
if you liked that character that had this like big moment at the end of episode 4, and no matter how exploitative it is, like this is a very kind of trashy kind of series, and that's a very pulpy, very, you know, commentating on that exploitativeness of the system. So that is like a valid kind of character moment, and that is kind of one of the few emotional moments in that arc, really. And so removing it for the sake of, you know, kind of playing it coy or keeping some sort of respectability, I guess. I don't know what you would say, but like keeping this sort of
reverence,
for the material, but not necessarily replacing it with anything to like replace the missing kind of pathos that someone else might have gotten from that moment. You're kind of just left with stuff happening and it looks pretty, but like then you're like, well, I'm not really engaging with this emotionally as much, so you think more logically about it, and then it's not holding up as well because they keep changing I don't hate it. Like as all my complaints and all that, like it's more of a frustration venting than anything, where it's just like, this could have been better. I can see potential in it, both in the writing of like the material itself and of the direction. It's just, they're not copacetic. They're not meshing well together.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of frustrating. That's like, man, it's like I got two good cakes, but combined they taste like shit for some reason.
It's like, man, I love peanut butter and jelly. I also loved baked beans. What if we put them together? Someone's listening to this going, that's one of my favorite fucking meals. What the fuck?
Oh, you mean beans and jelly?
Yeah, of course they would be British. I will say that nonetheless, despite our complaints, I feel like Sota Ueno as a director is continuing to solidify that he is an interesting voice currently working in the anime industry. And I am looking forward to seeing what he does next. Even if I don't necessarily love Shiba Yugi, there are nonetheless still aspects that I appreciate about it. It's a show that I'm enjoying watching more in the, like, the moment to moment stuff rather than, you know, thinking a lot about it afterwards.
Right. It's a thing where it's like,
I feel like
it's a thing where it's like, if it might fail, but it's doing so in an interesting way that I appreciate still.
Yes.
More so than if it were playing it safe and was like good in a very boring and safe way.
Yeah. Like I don't think we would be watching this if this were just a more straightforward, you know, quote unquote, faithful adaptation of the material.
I can't say that either, because like I'd have to see what that would have looked like.
I guess that's fair. Yeah.
Like it was.
But we are watching. Like, I feel like the main reason we are watching this is because we are interested in this director, and he is bringing something interesting to the table. Even if it's not like working 100%, it is still nonetheless something that we can. And, you know, I think nonetheless, we are enjoying discussing it, even if, you know, we have criticisms. It's still interesting to kind of like pick apart and kind of like dissect our own feelings in terms of why this maybe isn't working for us as much as it could.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we can get into, I mean, I don't really know how much we really spoilers would inform what we have to say about it. Like, with the most recent arc, with the, Golden Bath Arc, which is
the Golden Shower Arc.
A terrible name. Just a terrible, like, why would you? That's, did you not? Anyway,
R. Kelly, I mean, please.
Maybe that's just like,
I didn't know.
Maybe that's just, oh. It's like, maybe, again, maybe that's just leaning more into like the pornographic aspect of it. But nonetheless,
yeah, it could be.
I mean, I guess like Miles, well, I'll keep it relatively kind of vague. But in the most recent arc, the bathhouse arc, we get a lot of payoffs, especially in the most recent episode, which would be episode 7. We get a lot of payoffs in that episode in terms of character arcs, character relationships. And I feel like, and this is maybe potentially just a broader system symptom of how the story is being told, but it does feel like it was held down by those aspects. Well, nonetheless, I would say that those payoffs are well executed, well directed, in terms of just watching them in the moment. They nonetheless would have benefited from some further development, you know, having a little bit more time to cook these things. So that way, when you have this very, you know, beautiful, very stylistic, very, climactic payoff, it hits a little bit more and gives me a little bit more to appreciate beyond just the execution of the payoff itself stylistically. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like, and I think I said this, it almost feels like episode 7 should have been a like the season finale, and then we kind of just, the whole season itself is more so geared around Yuki and her rivalry with the character that's introduced in the second arc, Nishiro. That way, when that like whole like we can build up their relationship and dynamic a little bit more, and kind of how they feel for one another. And that way, when we get the payoff at the end, you know, if we did that at the end of the season, and it's kind of something that's built up over the course of the entire season, that impact works a lot better.
Yeah.
There's also just In episode, the preceding episode, episode 6, which is the start of the Bath arc, we also get another character, Ozlma, a blue-haired girl. And her character just kind of goes nowhere, it feels like. Like, we get her backstory in the episode. And her backstory is kind of weird, where she's a tomboy, so people don't like her and can't get a job. Oh, yeah. And
that was really interesting.
And I she says the line, like, I guess it's easier to, like, kill people in these games. And it's just like, okay, if this were presented in a little bit more of a heightened manner, because this is absurd. This is bordering on just being silly.
Yeah.
But we can nonetheless take advantage of that and, you know, present it in a little bit more of an artsy way rather than just having the character exposit this. It would work a lot better. Like Mishiro. Mishiro has a very edgy backstory that we get in the second game, but it's presented in such like a abstract and kind of like art house kind of way to it, that even though it is very like over the top and edgy, it nonetheless still works because of that stylization. Like I
it basically feel circumvents like your it. Logic center of irrational
yes.
thinking, because it's so avant-garde, I guess.
It's so heightened, yeah. But they don't really do that with this character, and it feels like it's just kind of like, why would she? It feels like her inclusion just doesn't really accomplish anything. And then they introduce in the episode 6, but then flesh out more in episode 7 another character, Rika. We get her backstory, and her backstory is presented in a more fragmentary, you know, kind of artsy way. But then it just doesn't have a lot of time to cook with her relationship with Rika, because by the time the episode ends, it's just like, yeah, that character's arc is done. And I just don't it doesn't really have as much of an emotional impact as I feel like it could have if this were developed a little bit more.
Yeah. I'm overly focused on like the logistics of things in this show.
Yeah, you're not emotionally invested in what's happening in the story at all. So you're just like, you are doing the cinnamon sins,
which is
fine. Like, which is fine, because I feel like it is at least in part the responsibility of the show to almost kind of pull a little bit of a magic trick, basically, because. If it's able to then get you as emotionally invested in the characters in the story, then those can kind of like distract you from maybe some of the more logistical errors that are going on.
Right.
And that's, you know, you can still acknowledge that those are like logistical errors, but nonetheless, there's an aspect there you could appreciate where it's like, wow, I didn't even really notice that when watching it because I was so focused and emotionally invested in these other aspects.
I am very complimentary of Elf and Lied as like its direction and pathos, and that is the dumbest fucking thing I think I've ever, where they show a map to a blind guy. Like, I, if I'm not thinking about that, it shouldn't be that hard. And like, I think part of the problem is, like we kind of hinted at, like a lot of these things are not present in the manga. So like the logistics of the ending of episode 7. There's a gun two kind of automatic machine gun things that will shoot you if you come toward the exit.
I don't think they're automatic machine guns. I think they're just giant 22 caliber rifles.
Whatever they're like automatic guns. Like there are like they're motion detected. You get too close, it shoots you or whatever.
Sure.
She like sees some boots at one point.
They're rubber boots because they're in a bathhouse.
She sees a key. She puts together something about the boots but she doesn't take the boots.
The key opens a locker to get the boots.
Right.
But she does. Yeah.
Like, well, it's a bathhouse, right? Like that's the theme. Like they give you the key.
They do explain this to some extent.
Well, they don't even need to, like, I feel like that's something they don't need to explain. It's like trying to explain that you need a ticket to get into a sporting event or something. Like, it's kind of something that's just kind of intuitively understood by the audience in Japan.
I guess less so for us as disgusting Americans.
Right. Like, you get
who don't bathe at all.
As someone that's been to a bathhouse in Japan, you get your little plastic shoe locker key because it's waterproof. You don't have to worry about it. It has like a little lanyard thing on it, like the little string. You can tie it to whatever if you need to. So that way you can get your shoes back whenever you get out of the bath. It all intuitively makes sense as a bathhouse concept, which is part of the reason why it bugs me that she never understood it was a bathhouse. And part of that is also kind of obfuscated by the kind of direction and like the art direction.
Yeah.
Where this bathhouse seems less like a bathhouse and more like a Roman pantheon to the bath. Like, yeah. At one point, they're like walking around and getting lost in the fucking back rooms and catacombs. It's a
big labyrinthian structure. Yeah. It feels less like a small, which in the manga, from what we could see, it is presented as much more than just like it's a smaller bathhouse, basically.
Yeah. Which there are like bath resorts. Like that was a thing kind of in like the 80s, I guess, before the bubble collapse. People would go to these like resorts kind of out in the country where they had like open air baths and. It was like a big bath place. But it didn't really quite look like that. So like, I don't know, like even then I feel like it should intuitively be understood. You're in a bathhouse, which then makes the reveal that like they're in a bathhouse kind of fall flat. Cause it's
the way that that's executed. The twist at the end of episode 6, we were just kind of like that just kind of feels
dumb.
Cheap. Yeah, it's not as satisfying. So I guess to spoil what the twist is.
Which we are in spoilers, we already told.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is a men's side and a woman's side because it's a bathhouse. It's not a mixed bathing house. It's just a bathhouse. But that and they mentioned that there is a when they explained to Yuki, like with the defenses they've set up, there's a wall over there. We never see the wall. Till the end of the episode, when it's revealed that the wall, the division between the two baths, the men's side and the women's side, where basically there are two teams in this game, that division is just some bamboo that's been driven into the ground.
No, so it's it's like
kind of
it's just a very rickety fence, like it's a bamboo fence. It's not even like. Because there are some like pretty sturdy bamboo fences. In this
giant Roman pantheon thing with these marble concrete walls everywhere, when they said like, oh, and we looked over there and it's just a wall, I was expecting a giant concrete wall, not a bamboo fence. Yeah,
because like the way it's set up is they don't show it to you. And then the character explicitly says like, we've checked the wall. It is secure. There's nothing over there. We are safe on that side. It's like, okay, great.
Yeah.
Like as a... That wouldn't make sense if you're in the show or whatever, in the situation itself. But as an audience member, it's like, okay, well, I can't look over there because you didn't animate that part for me to go look. So like I had to take the word for it. Show me what
the wall looks like.
But yeah, it shows the fence and you can see through the fence. Like it's not even like a wall.
there are gaps between the bamboo stalks.
And it's like, you didn't look.
Yeah, and the twist at the end is that the other team basically is able to get a sneak attack on them because they just take the bamboo out of the ground and go through. And it's like, that doesn't feel very satisfying. Like, we were coming up with other ways that they could have, like, done a twist like that. Yeah. Like, I think the idea that you brought up was in, like in the bath, there's a bathhouse episode in Urusei Yatsura where, like, obviously the idea of, like, the men getting into the women's bath is, like, a classic anime trope.
Right.
In Urusei Yatsura, the way that trope is executed is that there is, like a pipe or a tunnel, basically, that connects the two sides of the bath, and they swim under.
There's, like, a drain underneath. They swim through it. And, like, they pull. Yeah. They're, in the show, it's obviously a comedy. It's not meant to be, like, taken literally, but there's, like, a grating that covers the drain underneath, and they pull it out, and then they, like, go underneath to get to the women's side. There's, like, a fucking Cthulhu whale creature. I don't remember exactly what happened at that point. But it's not uncommon for these, like, baths to kind of have something connecting them underneath, and that's something that, like, you might not necessarily assume is in every bath, because it's not in every bath. But that would be something that could make sense where it's like she didn't think to look underneath the water because that's not in every bathhouse that there's going to be a connection underneath. but that is something that they took advantage of, and you could have had hints towards that, like maybe they're trying to like drain some of the water to like make it easier to access for them, and like maybe one of the characters in the background is like, hey, the water seems to be like lower, the water level seems to be lower or whatever, and they're like, oh no, I think you're just imagining it or whatever. Like there are plenty of things you could have done with that. The main kind of function of that was just to obfuscate the obviousness of it, because like the whole thing is supposed to be like she has hit the wall of 30, as they describe in the show, which is this is her 30th game, things are going, like whether it's like a self-fulfillment of prophecy or just becoming complacent because you've had so many games. Apparently when you hit 30 games, so many people just like fall apart and play like shit and end up dying because, again, they become complacent, or they just like know of this rule, and so they think they're being jinxed or whatever.
It psychs them out. Yeah.
And so that's kind of the logical explanation, which is fine. But the problem that I run into is that she's established as a character that is able to intuitively understand and put a lot of things together that are like above average intelligence, if it's an easy way to put it, I guess. In episode, was it 3, 4, whatever, where they like come across the ballots, she kind of immediately and intuitively understands like, oh, this is a ballot to use to vote because of the paper that it's created by. And also using,
she is shown to be very intelligent in terms of having like deductive abilities, being able to read a situation and what's going on.
And like, I can understand like, maybe you have some knowledge of some things, like, okay, maybe she just happened to know how the Greeks used to dress during like their democracy voting shit or whatever. So she was intuitively understood and put that together, and fine. That's fine. But like, when you get to a scene where she's looking at the wall that you can see through and see a forest on the other side of the bamboo wall that's easily just pulled up by undoing the string that's holding it together, and they're like, oh yeah, we checked that wall. Nothing good over there. We're safe, though. It's perfectly safe, and there's no way they can get us on that side. Even when, like, you come into a situation where they're trying to hide their tags, and they're like burying them in the bamboo forest that's by the bath for whatever reason, which I don't actually remember it, that making sense as far as the layout of the complex they're in. It would have made more sense if they had just buried it outside of the bounds of the game. Like, that's kind of like the first thing you think of as like a child, right? Is, oh, if I hide outside the fence, if we're hiding, playing hide and seek in the backyard, they'll never find me. Like, if I hide the tags outside the barrier, they might not think to look over there. It at least could buy more time. So like when they're hiding all these like traps and stuff, it makes intuitively more sense to do this way. The fact that they draw attention to it.
This is Mumy like logicking his way through, because he's not particularly emotionally invested in what's happening.
Well, yeah, again, like it's a problem on two fronts. Like, these are things that are just very easily fixed. Like, I'm not saying that you have to like create the most logically sound puzzle or whatever. Just do a little bit better than like the stupidly see-through fence. And then be like, oh, I didn't think that they could get through the fence. It's like, bitch, you can jump that fence. What do you mean? Like, what is this? And then like the ending of the arc where like she's like, oh, I got lucky, is also kind of unsatisfying in itself. And not in like a good way. Like, I think they are going for, it's like an unsatisfying in like a way that has meaning to it or whatever. But like what we actually get is just like, okay. Like she picks up a tag, happens to put it in her towel, and it just so happens to block a bullet. Like it's the fucking Family Guy sketch. It's like, oh, I have a bulletproof vest shield the size of a bullet somewhere on my body.
It's almost as if like it works basically as well as if the girl that she was fighting
just kind of slipped and broke her neck.
Yeah. Like, I was like, if they had just like done that where she like was kicking her ass and then like slipped on a soap bar or something and broke her neck, that would also be fucking like unsatisfying for the conclusion in a way that would make less like have less of a problem where you're just like, okay, Yuki is just God, I guess. She can't fucking lose any of these games, even when she plays like absolute horse shit. It, like, cause you kind of run into that issue because she is like so intelligent and has like all these deductive abilities or whatever. And then like the one time she plays like shit, she still fucking like survives. And it's just, yeah. Okay, sure. That's all right, I guess. It could have been done much better. I feel like if they had leaned more into the exploitative aspects, I feel like that would turn my brain off a bit more. Like, I wouldn't be like,
yeah,
thinking about, like, I think about these things because of the direction kind of seeming like it invites it. It's like, oh, there's gonna be deeper meaning, yeah, behind this. And then like if it were just like a kind of exploitative schlocky kind of thing, and then it still had these messages, I feel like I would come away more positively from it.
Yeah.
But again, I like the direction. I think it's fine. Just not my top five of the season. Not my top. I don't know. It's probably my top 10, maybe.
It is still in my top 10. And I guess, you know, if I were to show someone, because we're watching like 17, 18 shows this season, and like the idea was like, oh, this is like, you know, number 7 or 8 for me, then it's like, oh, it's mid. It's like, no, I actually still like it quite a bit, because I'm enjoying all the shows we're watching this season, because if I didn't like them, I just wouldn't fucking watch them.
But we
just have kind of mixed feelings and some reservations about Shiba Yugi. Not a bad show. Still would recommend watching it, if only just for the stylization. But yeah, these are just some issues that we had been discussing back and forth while watching the show.
I have been kind of lurking like the Shiba Yugi threads
on A,
and people do post like how on like 2chan they're like, the fucking foreigners like this. This is ironic. Like. It is funny like how much of like a difference in taste we have from each, yeah, other.
I would recommend, I'm just going through like the character designer for the light novel and the mangaka's like Twitter accounts, and I'm just like, these are very like appealing character designs. I do like in the anime, and this is kind of, you could say this change is emblematic of the show as a whole. Michiro's manager is just kind of this woman with like this like kind of short hair. It looks like buzzed on one side, and it's like got like this pattern. In the manga, and presumably in the light novel, she's like this like bratty gyaru loli.
Wait a minute, are you saying that they wokeified Shiba Yugi?
Yes, actually. I mean, no, literally. We literally, with the first episode, we were like, man, I can't believe they just cut out all the fan service in Shiba Yugi. You know, kind of tongue in cheek. But, you know, now that we're like, you know, this many episodes in, and it's like, I do think that it probably would have been, because you can do both. You can have this like, you know, stylization, this, you know,
you know, what? You can make Bakemonogatari. That's right.
You can, in fact. This is what makes Akiyuki Shinbo the GOAT, is that he's able to, you know, take both of these, you know, the pretentious art house stuff and the lowbrow, you know, ecchi fan service stuff and merge them together in a way that feels very cohesive and entertaining. I think we like I said, we jokingly complained about it at the start of the show, but it is kind of like, no, I think that is something that the show would have benefited from, because again, it would play more into like the voyeuristic aspect, the exploitative aspect.
Yeah, let the record show, the Weeb Crew is not wholesale in favor of censorship. All right, you know, we might look at something that might be censored, and we take it, you know, we assess what it's doing. Take it as it is. It's like, if it's doing something better, sure, go for it. If it's not, we're not on your side anymore.
I don't know. Well, that's I mean, that's kind of the thing. It's like they take that element out, but what they don't really do anything to, like, you know, fill that in to give us something else to, like, attach ourselves to.
Right.
Is kind of how it feels. It's not being replaced with anything. You know, it's like the idea is like, yeah, sure, you could say that, like, those aspects don't matter, but then it's like something does need to matter in a story at the end of the day, at least conventionally, if you're trying to make something entertaining for a broad audience, which is the case with anime. Anything else we want to talk about this season?
Did we talk about everything good last week?
I feel like it.
Let me take a look.
Let me see. Let me see. What are we watching this season real quick? I don't have anything I want to say about Tomon's B-side or Polar Opposites. I guess we will talk about Love Through a Prism next week because we'll be done with it. And we could talk about that for a while, probably, because we're not enjoying it that much.
No, sneak peek spoilers. It's not because your shonen slop, glazer inhalers or whatever the fuck.
Are we watching any shonen slop this season?
I'm watching JJK.
Yeah, I guess you're probably fuck you then. I guess like the closest Ivy is like Sentenced to Be a Hero and Fate Strange Fake. But then it's like I'm enjoying Tomlin's B side more than both of those, and I'm certainly enjoying Journal with Witch more than those. I'm also enjoying Invisible Man and his wife.
It's a web novel or web manga.
Oh, okay.
I'm holding it down on both ends. All right. I've seen Glass Mask. I've seen Nana. I've seen all this like shoujo classic shit. All right. I'll also see the fucking Jujutsu Kaisens and the Demon Slayer. All right. Like I'm holding it down.
You've seen all Naruto.
I'm holding it down. Don't try to act like I'm like exposing us in some way.
A fucking a Philistine or something. I guess to preface the next episode, which I guess will be our 100th episode. Are we just not going to... We'll do something special at some point. Now that we don't know. It'll be like the 104th episode or really? Some shit.
What is there even to do? Like, what do you do for...
We're going to have the big extravagant... We're going to invite every guest that we've had on the show to come on all at the same time. I'm sure it'll work for all their schedules, even the ones that are in Japan. It'll all work out perfectly. And it'll just be...
I mean, I know we've hit 100 episodes, but does anybody give a fuck about us that much that they would listen to just us self-flagellating ourselves for like an hour and a half?
We've talked... We have recorded like... 200 some hours of this podcast, probably. Great. It only took like 4 years, over 4 years to fucking do that.
Okay, to be fair, we're probably a bit over 200 hours if you include streams and stuff. We did have like that 1 8-hour stream on Evangelion.
Yeah, I guess if we include the streams, yeah. So, you know. Listen, I feel like podcasting is hard, okay? I feel like we deserve a little bit more of a congratulations. But yeah, we'll probably talk about... We'll finish Love Through a Prism this week, even though it just was dumped on Netflix all at once because fuck you, Netflix. We'll talk about that next week. Not really enjoying it that much, which is kind of a shame because it's also like the only original anime this season.
I mean... I didn't have high expectations because it's written by the Hanayori Dongo mangaka. I've not seen Boys Over Flowers myself or read it. I've just heard very mixed things, which I try not to like take to heart because like people said the same shit about fucking Kimigure Orange Road, and I ended up agreeing with that at all. So like. Maybe Boys Over Flowers is really good. I don't know. But maybe. I'm also not really surprised that we don't like this because I'm like, yeah, people didn't really like Boys Over Flowers either.
but it also has like really like high scores on both Annie-List and my Annie-List. It's kind of like, oh, okay. That at least indicates to me people are generally enjoying it. And then I'm just kind of watching it and I'm like, I don't quite understand what people are getting out of this unless I'm like being very cynical about it.
I do. I understand.
It's easy to be, well, that's what I mean. It's easy to be very cynical about, like, I see why people would like this shit.
It's not even being cynical. Yeah. Like, you don't have to take it that straight. It's just like, people are wanting romance, like good romance shows that aren't problematic or whatever the fuck. And then,
unproblematic romance doesn't take place in high school. Has beautiful characters and stuff, yada, yada, yada.
I mean, the people that have been talking to us are like, I like it because it's about, you know, her finding her place and she's working, being a working girl or whatever the fuck. It's like, that's fine.
She's not a working girl. Hold on. Here, that's not what he means by that.